Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Tell me about the Hayden Planetarium and what it was that was so special that changed your life.
Well, I think any planetarium has the potential to change anyone's life if you never had a previous encounter with the night sky. Now, you guys down under might take the clear sky for granted, but I grew up in New York City where no one has a relationship with the night sky, with the tall buildings and light pollution, and when I grew up, there was air pollution. So my first visit to my local planetarium, which is the Hayden Planetarium, I was starstruck. And from then on, I was 9 years old. From then on, I felt like the universe was calling me, and I had no choice in the matter.
And you never look back?
I've only ever looked up. How about that?
You were giving lectures on science, though, by the age of 15. So that would make you unusual.
I didn't think of it as being unusual at the time. All I was doing was talking about what I had expertise in or deep knowledge in. And yes, I was 15. I knew enough about the universe by then because I'd been interested since age 9. So it was like a whole 6 years of reading and my own telescope work. And I had my own camera. So I took my own pictures of the night sky, which helps to make very beautiful presentations to an audience. So I was being asked to just describe something as simple as my living room, right? And yet they paid me for it. I'm describing the universe, which was not so much my living room, but it had become my backyard. And it was odd that they would pay me for just describing something I was so familiar with. I didn't sweat. I didn't toil. I didn't suffer. So it was an odd sensation. I felt kind of cheap, actually.
Take us back from that time and what you knew at that point in your life to what you know and what we generally know about space and the stars and all of that now. How far have we come?
Well, we live in all sciences on an exponential growth of knowledge. And the interesting thing, when you are on an exponential growth, no matter when you ask someone on that exponential growth, how have things been going? They'll say, oh my gosh, the recent years have seen such an advance, because when you have an exponential growth, any time in the past will look like an exponential growth to any time that preceded it. It will look like that was the most amazing time to be alive. So what I can tell you without hesitation is, from when I was a kid until now, we discovered the age of the universe, that there's something such as dark energy. We're accelerating. The expansion of the universe is accelerating against the wishes of gravity. We've discovered black holes in the center of every galaxy. This is going on and on. We have some idea of what might be the theory of everything in the path of string theorists. So, yeah, and I'm celebrating this now, but you just wait. In another 20 years, I'll be looking back at today and say, oh, they didn't know anything back then.
Having said that, you're a big fan of NASA. How much should we spend? I mean, how much energy should we put into doing what we need to do with space?
Yeah, I will not tell people what they should do. What I would do is alert you of the things yet to be discovered and what their potential value is, not only to sort of the human spirit, but to the human condition, your health, your wealth, and your security. And when you explore, you discover things that clever people figure out how to enhance life for having made that discovery. So I will just highlight this for you. In a free country, I don't want to force anyone to have to devote money in any particular way, but I will highlight for you what spending money in that way will do. In the United States, for example, we had the space shuttle, the space stations, the Hubble telescope. We had so many things going on, and you'd ask people, how much money do you think NASA's getting? And they might say 10% of the federal budget, 15%, 5%. But the answer is one half of one penny on your tax dollar goes to NASA. So people thought NASA's budget was much larger, which means they're spending it wisely and quite visibly, if you want to think about it in that context. So if you want to go to Mars and you want to have higher ambitions, sure, you'd want to up it from a half a penny to 3/4 of a penny, or maybe an entire penny, 1/100th of your expenditures. Why not? How much is the universe worth to you?
So you're arguing basically knowledge for knowledge's sake.
Well, it's knowledge for knowledge's sake at the time you glean it, at the time you discover it. But then decades later, at the longest, but more typically several years later, someone clever sees that brand new knowledge, which was obtained at the time for knowledge's sake, and says, wait a minute, I have an idea. We can connect it with this other bit of knowledge and create this new thing that will enhance our lives. For example, in the 1920s, we had very smart people studying what the atom was and what molecules were. And you couldn't even see them. You still can't see atoms. But we knew they were there because of their behavior. And you would have said back then, why are you doing this? This is knowledge for knowledge's sake. How does it improve my life? If you ask those scientists, they would say, you're right, we have no idea how it will improve your life. 50 years later, it would be the birth of the information technology revolution. There is no creation, storage, or retrieval of information without understanding the quantum. And in the 1920s, quantum physics was discovered. So you should never say to yourself, don't do this research because no one today can figure out how it will apply. You just wait till tomorrow.
That very line you used, actually, about the penny and the dollar, you're in front of that Senate Science Committee. You remember that? You said, we can transform the country from a solemn, dispirited nation weary of economic struggle into one where it has reclaimed its 21st century right to dream of tomorrow. So that's basically what you were telling the politicians.
Wow, yeah. I forgot about that when I testified there. That's right. I'm just trying to put it out there. And, you know, I don't even like speaking to politicians because they are duly elected by a population. What I'd rather do is say that to the population. And then, if they're convinced of it, they would only ever elect politicians who agreed with that worldview, that exploration is a good thing and that discovery brings health and wealth and security to a nation. Because otherwise, you have to keep going back every time somebody new gets elected. Whereas once you infuse it into the population, then they take complete control of their own destiny.
Did you see the movie Hidden Figures?
Yes, I did. Yes.
So that was a very political thing, wasn't it? I mean, they wanted to beat the Russians as opposed to exploring for exploring's sake.
Oh, yeah. So let's be very clear. NASA was invented. NASA was founded on fear that the Soviet Union would gain high ground above us, because there was Sputnik launched October 4th, 1957. And while there were rules about what airspace you could fly into and what country you could fly over, if you're in space, well, that's not airspace, that's space, right? And there was Sputnik flying over the United States, and we freaked out. I don't know what the down under version of that term is, but we freaked out, and we did not want to be bested by these evil communists. And so we put all of our resources into space, and we finally set a goal to land on the moon. And so that was the response. Yes, it was entirely political. By the way, how you spend money on science, if it's through tax-based sources, has always been political. What you don't want is to have politics pick and choose what they think is the right science to fulfill their philosophies. Then you're cherry-picking scientific research, and that's the beginning of the end of an informed democracy.
Exactly what I was about to ask. Does the politics of space now worry you? I mean, can we all cooperate?
Yeah, I think it's very possible to cooperate. That's what the International Space Station was. The International Space Station was the largest collaboration of nations ever outside of the waging of war, and largest in terms of budget and cost and this sort of thing. Of course, the World Cup is very big, the Olympics is very big, but in terms of cost, the International Space Station, multiple nations involved. In fact, it may be that scientific collaboration needs to lead cultural collaboration into the future, because scientists speak a language that transcends the whatever is spoken on their home soil. We speak the language of math. We speak the language of science. And an emergent scientific truth will be shown to be true, if you have the experiments to back it, if that's true, it is true no matter if you believe in it, no matter your culture, no matter your language. So collaboration is an important, may be the most important part of what it is to go forward. But no, the politics of it doesn't concern me. It's when it's partisan that concerns me, not when it's just simply political. Everything is political. Let's not be naive, right? When someone's, I've heard people say, I liked Washington, but there's just so much politics there. Excuse me, politics is not a barrier between where you are and where you want to go. It is the currency of what happens in Washington, D.C. So just recognize that, absorb it, and get the job done.
Do you reckon science is always one of those subjects that people either love or embrace or they hate and can't stand it? And do you think you're winning the war to win people over to science generally?
Yeah, so that's a great and perceptive point. I think the people who hate it and they don't get it, they, as a minimum, what I would want is that you have people who are just indifferent to it rather than actively hostile to it. If you're indifferent, you say, I don't know, I don't care, let other people figure it out, and then, okay, we can deal with that. But if you're actively hostile, something must have happened in your life to turn out that way. Meanwhile, I bet those same people that are actively hostile are pulling out their smartphones, finding directions to wherever they want to go, using GPS satellites and physics technology, physics engineering and other technologies to enable that level of convenience. But they're saying, oh, I don't like science. Oh, by the way, hand me my smartphone. You know, what's going on there?